Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Rick and Tony are here with me. We're going to jump right into the news. We've got some wild stuff going on. Let's watch this video from Jerome Powell.
So, you know, we're not allowed to own Bitcoin. The Federal Reserve Act says what we can own, and we're not looking for a law change. That's the kind of thing for Congress to consider, but we are not looking for a law change at the Fed.
All righty, Tony. Tell me what you think. Right now, they're not allowed to own Bitcoin. Is his understanding of the law as it exists? None of us are legal experts, so let's take him at face value. Let's assume he's right about something for the first time since he's been around. Do you think this is going to change?
Yeah, of course it's going to change. I mean, they don't want Bitcoin right now because, I mean, why would you shoot yourself in the foot by accepting, you know, something that puts you out of business like almost instantly? So they probably want to stay as far away from Bitcoin as they possibly can, but you know, until they're pressured to or pinned in a corner, you know, up to a certain point where they have no choice, but I don't know, to accept it, to put it on their balance sheet, to do something with it other than ignore it. So time will tell how soon that comes, but I don't think there's going to be much. I don't think it's going to be a long-term delay for such a 180 on that decision.
Yeah. Rick, what's your reaction?
Yeah, it's not a massive surprise, is it, that the Federal Reserve isn't going to start buying Bitcoin anytime soon. I mean, as Jerome Powell says, they're not allowed to. The Federal Reserve Act doesn't even allow them to buy gold, right? And I think the interesting thing here is this really shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that the Federal Reserve are not going to buy Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is there to put the Federal Reserve out of business altogether. Because instead of having a small group of people in a room locked away somewhere deciding the monetary policy that will impact the whole world, instead Bitcoin is a far superior system where, yeah, we don't just have like a group of financial shaman looking at the tea leaves in their cup and moving interest rates around in a vain attempt to try and direct an entire global economy in one direction or the other, right? Like in hundreds of years time, people are going to look back at this and they're going to think it's like doing a rain dance to try and make it rain, right? It's a ridiculous notion that these people have any influence to steer the economy. But yeah, I mean, imagine if Jerome Powell was allowed to print money to buy Bitcoin. I mean, it's almost tragic for Jerome, isn't it? Imagine having a money printer, right, and not being allowed to buy Bitcoin. I can't think of anything more frustrating, right? But look, I mean, if they did, this wouldn't be a good thing for everybody, right? Like, I know there's a lot of number go up maxis out there that just want everyone and anyone to buy Bitcoin and pump their bags up. But if the Federal Reserve tomorrow started printing money to buy Bitcoin, all chaos. It would be chaos. I mean, that's basically the Federal Reserve saying, yeah, there's no faith in the dollar anymore. We've totally ballsed it up. The game's over and we're all moving to Bitcoin. Can you even imagine? The dollar would just tank overnight. It would be crazy. And also, look, you know, this isn't the way that it's going to happen either. It's not the Federal Reserve that are going to suddenly start buying Bitcoin and put themselves out of business. What's more likely is that the Federal Reserve will print money that ends up turning into Bitcoin, but it will be done so by the US government potentially, you know, starting their strategic Bitcoin reserve and buying Bitcoin with money that they borrow from the Fed, right? So there'll be an extra hop in between. But look, you know, it's again like the number go up maxis. They really need to dial down the greed and calm down a little bit, because why would you be really excited about your government buying Bitcoin? I can't think of anything dumber, to be honest with you, because they're only going to be able to buy Bitcoin in one of two ways. Either they're going to take taxes from you and buy Bitcoin, which means that could have been money that you could have used to buy Bitcoin instead of your government, which is surely preferable. Or they're going to print a load of money to buy Bitcoin, in which case they're going to make you poorer by debasing anything like your salary if you're still paid in fiat and stuff like that. So, man, the amount of people getting really excited about their government buying Bitcoin, basically, you can tell that these people showed up in the last 2 or 3 years, right? They're not here for freedom. They're not here for the freedom to transact with one another. They're here because that, you know, they want the next pair of Nike trainers or they want a new car. You know, and yeah, this isn't the way that, I mean, it's inevitable. You can't stop it, right? Nation states are going to cotton onto this, but why you would celebrate it as a private citizen, I'm not really sure. I would much prefer to see our governments get much smaller rather than have, you know, a big bankroll of Bitcoin. The only other thing worth mentioning about Powell today, because, I mean, what a tedious man, but the only other thing worth mentioning about his speech the other day was he said, this one made me laugh, he said, people are suffering more from higher prices than they are from inflation. And I'm thinking, like, these guys are unbelievable, right? Like, you know, trying to suggest that these two things are kind of separate. I mean, we know that inflation is just inflation of the money supply, but that is what causes higher prices. So, yeah, again, the Federal Reserve are not buying Bitcoin. It's no surprise because we've said it before, but turkeys don't vote for Christmas. So, you know, why would they adopt something that's going to put them completely out of business? I can't wait until we never speak about Jerome Powell on this podcast again, because the Federal Reserve doesn't exist and he's out somewhere waiting tables or, you know, God knows what, or maybe in jail for being such a heinous criminal. Who knows?
One thing you touched on, like a lack of understanding as to why people want their government to buy Bitcoin. Obviously, there's number go up. I mean, that's sort of the, you know, I think a lot of people just recognize what that would do for their stack. I think the other thing, though, is a lot of people are in the, and this is a hard mindset to evade, because I still kind of deal with it sometimes. It's like you're still in this us versus them mentality of traditional politics, where it's like, you know, as an American, like, you know, the United States, we're the good guys, and China or Russia, someone else are the bad guys. And I've pretty well broken free of that, you know, mindset. But a lot of people are still getting their news from the Wall Street Journal and Fox or CNN and, you know, the New York Times or whatever. And if that's the case, then you're inherently drawn to this notion of, my country needs to be the most powerful. And if you kind of understand Bitcoin, you want them to put it on their balance sheet. So I think it really takes like getting escape velocity on that concept to where you just like, it's like, there are no good guys. There are like most everyone's a bad guy most of the time. Let's just operate under that assumption. And let's strive for individual personal self-sovereignty, not sovereignty of the nations. So that's, you know, my comment there. Rick, let's jump into one that you, I think you've looked into this a little bit more than Tony and I had the chance to, but this is big news. So El Salvador is secured a $3.5 billion IMF loan. Merchants are no longer, as part of the deal, merchants are no longer required to accept Bitcoin. Taxes must be paid in dollars. And the government's role in the Chivo wallet, which is their, I guess, national Bitcoin wallet, will be gradually reduced. So, Rick, maybe frame this out for us, what you know, and give me your thoughts. Is Bukele capitulating? Is he kissing the ring of the IMF?
No, I don't believe so. I think in a lot of ways, he's just kind of toying with them a little bit, because these demands that they've put on Bukele and El Salvador in order to get this IMF loan, especially, well, specifically to do with the demands around Bitcoin, is, you know, first of all, they've said acceptance must be voluntary, right? So it's not meant to be legal tender, as in, you know, any merchants are forced to accept Bitcoin as payment. But I don't really think that matters, right? You know, some people are going to accept it, some people aren't going to accept it. You know, the last time I was in El Salvador, there were quite a few shops that didn't accept it. And then there were a lot of places that did accept it, right? And the cool thing about money is that, you know, you can't, nobody could have ever forced Bitcoin to become the global reserve currency. That's not how money works. Good money emerges, right? And populations converge on the best type of money. So I don't really think it matters whether or not, you know, Bukele is forced to say it is or it isn't legal tender. If people want to use it, they're going to use it. So I don't really think he's really giving much up in that regard. The other thing that's interesting is them talking about the unwinding of the participation in the Chivo wallet, right? So The Chivo wallet is the wallet that El Salvador launched when they took on their Bitcoin strategy, right? And tried to make it easy for everyone to get on board. And I believe they gave every citizen like, you know, $30 worth of Bitcoin or whatever if they downloaded the Chivo wallet. Again, the IMF suggesting that the government needs to take a step back from that wallet, I don't think is particularly bad news or something that any of us should really care about because, well, first of all, Chivo wallet, as I understand it, was custodial anyway. So that wouldn't be the wallet that I would recommend someone in El Salvador to choose. And just because the government's not involved in Chivo wallet anymore doesn't preclude any of the El Salvadorian citizens from downloading other Bitcoin wallets, you know, open source ones. I mean, there's loads available, right? So will that slow down the usage of Bitcoin in El Salvador? I don't really think so. It doesn't really cut anybody off from anything. And ultimately, if it's a custodial wallet, I'm not too worried about seeing it perform not very well or not be supported by the government anymore, because I would prefer to see people go into a sort of non-custodial route. And then, look, you know, the main ones that are interesting is when they say that taxes must be paid in dollars. Again, that seems like a move from the IMF to desperately try and protect the relevance of the dollar, right? If you're forced to pay your taxes in dollars, it means that dollars, you know, are still required by the people of El Salvador to you know, go about their daily lives. It seems a bit of a cheap attempt to try and keep the dollar relevant. I don't think, again, it has a huge amount of impact. But the most interesting one to me was that they said that the public sector should be scaled back how much that they can do Bitcoin transactions and also make purchases in Bitcoin. That's the one that's really interesting because El Salvador at the moment, I believe, have a policy where they buy one Bitcoin every day. So I don't know to what extent these IMF rules extend to stopping Bukele from acquiring more Bitcoin for El Salvador. My guess is that it probably isn't going to slow them down that much because I would expect Bukele to reject that outright if he was, you know, forced to stop buying Bitcoin at all. But again, it's the thing that really strikes me about this is that, you know, it wasn't that many years ago the IMF would tell you that Bitcoin was just a total joke. And then when they're doing things like this and putting these restrictions on such a small country like El Salvador, all it tells me is that they're terrified. You know, this is the behavior of someone who's a little bit desperate and a little bit afraid. And hey, look, you know, what I would love to see happen, I don't know if it will, but like, you ever heard those sayings, like once you've got your opponent on the ropes, don't stop swinging at that point? Well, if the IMF are desperate and afraid and worried about the relevance of the dollar, wouldn't it be amazing if Bukele took this $1.35 billion loan from the IMF and just went, boom, smash buy, just turned it all into Bitcoin on day one? That would be the most Chad thing that he could do. Whether or not he's based enough for that, we don't know. But that would set some fireworks off.
Yeah, I agree with you on a lot of that. Like the net impact of all of the things you described, I think are minimal. I think what maybe concerns me is, first of all, why do they need the loan? Like, why do we have the IMF? Why are they doing this? You know, it's just it seems ridiculous. But second, that he would compromise on those things in order to get the loan, even if the impact to Bitcoin or, you know, his conviction on Bitcoin remains like is minimal. I guess my concern is just you're letting the IMF dictate rules for your country in exchange for dollars. And I don't like that. Now, I don't understand how these IMF loans work. I remember listening to Alex Gladstein talk about this a long time ago on some podcasts, and you realize like what a criminal enterprise the IMF is when you hear him explain how countries suffer. But you're kind of beholden to them for a long, long time when you take these loans. And maybe this is sort of, you know, a leftover issue of years and years of taking on IMF loans. And so they kind of need to begin to unwind over time, and they're not financially in a place where they can do that yet. But that would be my only concern. I'd be shocked if his conviction in Bitcoin has changed. I mean, they're still buying a Bitcoin a day. And, but yeah, I don't like seeing that he, to some degree, had to come to that compromise. So Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, man, I agree with the two of you. This is a very disappointing story that broke. First of all, you don't play with the devil and just expect him to be nice, right? You don't invite cancer into your body and hope it doesn't, it only destroys like a tiny piece of irrelevant tissue, right? Once you invite a cancer into your system, it's been created to destroy you. And so it starts by little bite-sized pieces and then it works its way into the rest of the system. Why he's having a conversation with that garbage to begin with, that is the number one question. His whole premise since when he first came on the scene was, we are independent, fuck you, we don't want you, you know, end of story. Why are you having a conversation with these people now? That's one. Second of all, you know, regardless of how minor these changes are, that's not the point. Why are you letting these people make these demands when you don't need them? Didn't he just discover trillions of dollars of gold in El Salvador? Yeah, why does he need the fucking loan from the IMF? What purpose does it serve? I think there's something like bigger, more nefarious going on. Maybe he was blackmailed or threatened. I mean, why else? Mm-hmm. Nothing else makes sense to me. He doesn't need the money. It's clear. Why would he take it? And why would he base the taxes on dollars? To keep it relevant, right? So that people still think, oh no, we still need the dollar. Nobody needs a dollar. It's another worthless piece of toilet paper. But when you have gangs like this, criminals like this, enforcing these things, and worse, you have people capitulating to these demands, how do you expect the problem to go away? Like, if you keep letting a bully kick your ass, he's going to keep kicking your ass. The whole idea is to destroy that bully. He was doing great. Just ignore these people. Nobody needs them. You can't go to war with them. You know, that's like insane. But you don't have to go to war. All you have to do is ignore them and defund them. Stop using their shitty product. It's not that difficult. And he was on the right track for such a long time. Everybody praised him. Fuck, even I praised him. Now I feel stupid for doing that, because it just confirms again that you can't trust any politician. Sooner or later, they're going to disappoint you by doing something they're not supposed to. Right?
Would your opinion change if he did smash by a few billion dollars of Bitcoin with the loan?
It's never going to happen. That's like a wet dream you guys are having.
No.
You know? That's sure never going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure there are so many contingencies and, you know,
and whatever these rules that are dictated now, do you honestly think these won't change or won't get modified or tweaked a little bit so it goes unnoticed, and then you keep accepting a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, and before you realize you're completely fucked? This is what led us to the world we live in now, right? With the erosion of privacy. Oh, it's okay. It's not so bad. Oh, it's okay. It's not so bad. Year after year after year after year. And look where you are now. Now, if you open your mouth in the wrong way, they throw you in jail in some countries. Like, who would have thought this insanity would even be a reality?
Yeah.
But this is what happens when you don't think, when you capitulate, when you act based on fear, when you don't stand your ground and do what's right. This is what happens. Bullies are always going to exist, but it's a numbers game. There's more people on the side of good than they are on the side of evil. But somehow, this tiny percentage has everybody petrified.
Yeah.
No, as far as I'm concerned, this is an extremely disappointing move on the part of El Salvador. I don't know how it's going to play out, man. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't know. It's put an extremely bad taste in my mouth. And I'm not optimistic on this outcome.
Yeah, no, I think that's a reasonable position to take. And you know, I guess we need to see what none of us know is, why are they taking the loan? And maybe there's some compelling, like, they're still in this doom loop of trying to unwind from the IMF loans that a lot of small, poorer countries get into. And so there could be more to the story that, you know, maybe I'd say, okay, you know, he does need the money. He does need the worthless dollars for whatever reason. I'm not a macro analyst, so like I can't say for sure. But
no, but look, your he point paid is off taken, their loan. But he paid off their loan. The initial loan was paid off, right? That was the whole. He made a big hoopla about this not that long ago. That we paid off the loan. The Bitcoin investment was the best decision ever made. We pay off the IMF loan. We tell them to fuck off. We don't need them. Now you dig yourself in with an even bigger loan with the same garbage all over again. Why? It doesn't make financially doesn't make any sense. It only makes sense if somebody puts a gun to your head and tells you, if you don't do this, you know, we're going to have another type of conversation. Maybe that could lead to a decision like this. And if that's the case, you know, then there should be other conversations in order to put an end to this coercion.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if you're onto something with blackmail. I mean, that's one of the most powerful tools in existence against any human. And who knows? I mean, as a politician, he probably has some dirt on him, and you know, like, it could be personal stuff. It could be something else that the IMF knows that no one else does. What, you know, whatever. So, anyway, I think we kicked this one around long enough. Let's jump into the ETFs. U.S. ETFs bought 2,500 Bitcoin yesterday, 23,800 last week, 84,000 last month, and over half a million this year. So, year one. If you can imagine where this is going, it's things are probably going to continue to get crazy. I think I saw something that, like, the gold I'd seen a chart of, like, the gold ETF, how it performed in its first year, and then the second year was an order of magnitude larger. So I know we're not ETF maxis, we're not Bitcoin proxy maxis. I know we probably piss people off with a lot of our Saylor commentary. Not that we're critical of him, but maybe critical of people trying to earn dollar. We find that trying to earn dollars through a Bitcoin proxy is an inferior product. But Rick, what do you think of this? Is this what you would have expected for the first year? And do you think it's just going to continue to climb?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it do. I think it will continue, and it is what I expected. For me, the size of the ETF inflows are one of the best measures of human stupidity that you could find. Right, the more the money flows into the Bitcoin ETF, the more you realize that the vast majority of people that do want exposure to Bitcoin or want to buy it probably struggle tying their laces and their shoes in the morning, right? Because the Bitcoin ETF products are total garbage, right? And anybody who buys them just really either hasn't understood or is maybe a bit too lazy to do the work required to just buy the underlying asset. Because when you buy the Bitcoin ETF, you don't own any Bitcoin. If you own ETF shares, you don't own any Bitcoin. If you
don't even own an IOU. You don't even own an IOU on Bitcoin, to be clear. You can't cash out for Bitcoin.
Exactly. If you sell your shares, all you get back is dollars, right? And the other thing is that these Bitcoin ETF products, they come with fees, right? So Let's say for argument's sake, just for easy math, let's say that one Bitcoin is trading today at exactly $100,000 and you're sitting there with $100,000 in the bank. If you now say, right, I want to get exposure to Bitcoin. Well, there's the smart way of doing it, which is just buying a Bitcoin and putting it into self-custody, right? And then you'll keep that Bitcoin for as long as you want to or until you spend it. Alternatively, if you take that $100,000 and you buy Bitcoin ETF shares, then let's say there's a 1% fee after 1 year, right? Then at that point, you will have spent $1,000 in fees. So now your Bitcoin stack is now worth $99,000. So let's say you sold those shares and went to buy real Bitcoin. All of a sudden, you can't afford a whole Bitcoin anymore. So the longer you sit in the Bitcoin ETF shares in those products, the less Bitcoin you end up with overall. So the whole thing's stupid. It's you can't transact in ETF shares. You can't easily sort of move around the world and use this economic value like you could if you had Bitcoin. And you end up with less Bitcoin than you would have started with, and it's more expensive to do so. Oh, and let's add on top that there's this ever present risk of a government rug pull of some sort, right? The US government says, right, we're commandeering all this Bitcoin in the interest of national security. Don't worry, we'll give you the dollars back, but that Bitcoin's ours. I understand where people say, look, my money, Rick, is tied up into a pension, and I'm actually not allowed to access that money anymore. You know, until for the next 20 years. So I can't buy Bitcoin, actual Bitcoin with it. And I want exposure to Bitcoin because it's the best performing asset. Then I'm like, okay, right. In those sorts of circumstances, I can see why you'd put your pension money into a Bitcoin ETF instead of, you know, some other stock on the stock market. But if you've got actual money like cash that you have access to now, and you're buying the Bitcoin ETF with it instead of actual Bitcoin, then yeah, you know, I think you're the sucker in the room, right? Like, you're the one at the table who doesn't really understand the game, and you're the one who's going to lose out eventually. So yeah, you know, people are going to keep tripping over themselves, keep buying these worthless products, and yeah, it's all, you know. And the other thing is, everyone on Bitcoin Twitter celebrates this like it's some amazing thing. It's that number go up mentality again. Like, you know, for a lot of us, the interest is in freedom go up. The whole reason I got into Bitcoin in the first place is I really loved the idea of being able to transact with other people like you, Michael, or you, Tony, and we could just do business together without anybody getting in the way or telling us what we can and can't do. That is the main promise of Bitcoin. But look, if you're lured in just by the number go up element of Bitcoin, then it's really easy to trick you and trap you into stupid products that are actually going to reduce your freedom and expose you to risk that you really don't need. So yeah, look, yeah, I'm sure more and more and more money is going to pile into the ETFs. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is a measure of the dumb money, right? So don't do that.
So Rick, I completely agree with everything you said as the voice of grace and sympathy here. I'll make one comment for our listeners who maybe are put off by that. I think that if you, first of all, a lot of these people don't understand Bitcoin. They just recognize it's a scarce asset. It's going to go up in value. Even if you are a Bitcoiner, though, and you say, hey, like, I think Bitcoin's going to be the next global reserve currency, but I think that's going to take 100 years to play out, and the dollar is going nowhere, and I can get some exposure to the number go up aspect of Bitcoin. Yes, I'm going to pay some fees. I get it. So my return's going to be 49% instead of 50, but who cares? I'm going to earn dollars because I think I'm going to continue to need dollars for some period of time. I think you're not concerned about like, oh, I need to be able to take my money with me. Like if you think the world is going to continue to operate, I guess my point is, if your base case is that the world is going to continue to operate relatively similar to the way that it currently does for a long period of time, I can understand some justification. It's not what I would opt for. I want to own Bitcoin. I want to own the asset. I want self-sovereignty and number go up without any fees and all of that. But I'm trying to steel man the other side of the argument here. I'm not actually disagreeing or arguing with you. And I'm sure you would poke holes in that too. Tony, what do you think?
Man, that's the problem, is that there's too many people that think that the dollar is going to be around for the next 100, 200 years.
I agree with that.
I don't think so at all. And when I see these inflows, there's two things that irk me. The first thing is how many people celebrate it, okay? Because that tells me that most of these quote-unquote Bitcoiners are fucking full of shit. They're fiat coiners. They're not Bitcoiners. Otherwise, why would you get horny over an ETF inflow? Like, how does that impact your life whatsoever other than number go up, number go up in worthless toilet paper? So if that's what you're after, then at least, you know, come out and say, okay, I want to be rich in dollars and I'm using Bitcoin to do that. Bitcoin wasn't created for this. Bitcoin is freedom go up, as Rick mentioned earlier. It's, I don't need anybody's permission to use my money, my time and energy. The problem is every time there's a massive inflow like this from these guys, it means that the average individual, the one who actually needs the freedom money, is not going to get a chance to buy it, or at least get it as easily, right? And instead, it's the same thieving, corrupt criminals that are taking advantage of this and are selling this garbage ETF to suckers. It's a sucker's game. It's a sucker product. There's no difference between an ETF and a Hawk2a meme coin. It's the same shit, just marketed differently, right? So if you're dumb enough to go put money in an ETF when you have the option not to, well, then congratulations. You know, you are a certified dummy. because one, you don't understand money, and two, you're not going to make any money. So I just celebrate these ETF inflows, because for me, it irks me that not more people are actually doing what it takes to benefit their lives. You know, you have an opportunity of a lifetime to just pay attention for a few minutes and take a few steps to tremendously upgrade your life. And yet you're wasting it away listening to people who have never had your best interest in mind.
Yeah.
You know, when people like Jerome Powell go up and speak and the markets move, what does that tell you about the human race?
Bunch of donkeys.
Well, that's precisely what it tells you. Like, how do you let one guy impact so many people's financial lives? Like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, like who is he? Is he a god? Is he eternal? Like, who is he? So when you voluntarily let your life get impacted by one individual or group of individuals, it says everything about you, right? Maybe you don't deserve freedom money. Maybe you are born to remain somebody else's donkey. And if that's the case, well, have fun. You know, donkeys survive by getting beaten. You know, every once in a while, you'll get beaten. And every once in a while, they will continue to beat you, because why not? You voluntarily accept it. You invite it by remaining in that system.
Yeah.
So ETFs, give me a break, man.
I guess my last comment would be, if your base case is that the dollar exists forever in the same capacity that it does today, maybe upgrade your base case. All right, guys, we got to be short on this one because I got to hop off here soon. But BlackRock isn't, so Pledator shared, BlackRock isn't what Bitcoiners need to worry about. So, he was responding to someone saying BlackRock probably does control the fourth choice of Bitcoin now. And his point was, no, it's the custodian of the ETFs. So Coinbase's power over Bitcoin is limited with fork, because with forks, you can only sell your fork once, but they have more power over other blockchains, blah, blah, blah. This is interesting. I think this is uncharted territory. If there's a contentious fork war again, who decides? Is it the people who own it? Is it the people who custody it? Maybe just give me your thoughts on that. Rick, what do you think? Who controls what fork is opted for in this sort of contentious situation?
Well, you know, like normal, nobody, right? So I think the argument they're trying to make here is that, you know, if I don't know, Coinbase or whomever controls or holds the keys to most of the Bitcoin, that this gives them some outsized influence over the network, and that if, you know, they want to then propose a fork or a change to Bitcoin, that everybody will just follow what they're saying. I don't think it's as simplistic as that, right? They're trying to suggest that because that's where all the value is and everybody's a number go up maxi, that they will just follow whatever these custodians wish to do. But I'm not so convinced, right? And the reason I'm not convinced is, well, let's take an example. Let's say Coinbase suddenly decide, well, we're going to fork and we're going to remove the 21 million hard cap of Bitcoin. Whether or not the rest of the network is going to follow along with that idea, I'm not so convinced, right? Obviously, that's a really contentious one, but that's why it worked as a good example. Certainly, if they forked Bitcoin like that, then I'm not going to be interested in this new coin, this new shitcoin that they've created, where they get to control the circulating supply. That's the whole reason we got interested in Bitcoin in the first place. Was, you know, we didn't want anybody to have control over the money. So, look, you know, could they cause an absolute load of chaos? Yeah, absolutely. You know, if Coinbase did something like that and said, we're only supporting the fork that we're in favor of, as a user, you've got a couple of problems, right? If your Bitcoin is on Coinbase's exchange, they might only support the coin that they've forked, and you would have no access to the original Bitcoin that you thought that you owned, right? It'll be completely up to their discretion whether that belongs to you or not, right? That's uncharted territory. Because I remember when Bitcoin Cash forked off of Bitcoin, right? What happens if you're in self-custody is actually you end up with the coins of both chains. And if you're smart or even maybe just a little bit nervous, maybe the best thing to do is to sit tight and see where the consensus actually forms. Does it form around the new coin or does it form around the old coin? So look, I think Coinbase has to be careful. I don't think they suddenly have the keys to drive Bitcoin in any direction that they want. Because if they start doing crazy stuff, the consensus will just form elsewhere outside of their coin. right? So if they're crazy or stupid enough to do that, they may end up just making themselves irrelevant, right? Because they support the coin and everyone goes, nah, that coin looks rubbish. We're going to do what we were doing originally. So screw you guys. Well, they lose all their lunch. So, you know, I guess the argument being made in that tweet was that because that's where most of the value is, they have outsized control. But I don't believe that to be true. I don't think they'd have any more influence than any big whale with a big load of coins. You know, there's people out there with thousands, tens of thousands of Bitcoins that got in really early, but they have no more influence over the network than someone who just bought £10 worth of Bitcoin the other day. So, look, I don't know. A hard fork would be crazy, right? The markets would go wild. The opportunity would reach maximum height, right? Because of all the fear and FUD that would cause. But look, for people like me, I'm always going to follow the fork that I think is most aligned with my values and the freedoms that I want to follow. If they start making changes to Bitcoin that don't work for me, I'm not actually that bothered about which coin is most valuable. I'm interested in which form of money is most sound and which one gives me most freedom. If they did it, maybe they slow down Bitcoin's ascendance to reserve currency status by 50 years, or maybe for longer, right? And I don't even see it in my lifetime. Who cares? Who knows? You know, the idea behind having a currency that's controlled by no one, that idea is not going back in the bag. So I don't know. It could cause some chaos, but overall, not too worried.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, people need to remember that it's not the size of your bag or your stack. It's not the number of nodes that you run. As an entity, you are a node. Like, you are a vote in what happens. Like, you get to decide. And so our clients, they're running nodes. They have the same vote that BlackRock has. If BlackRock wanted to run 100,000 nodes, they would just be forming their own little network if everyone else just decided, we're not going to do what, you know, this fork that you've chosen. And that's so incredibly powerful. And I think incredibly misunderstood too. So it's an important point to raise. Tony.
Yeah. I mean, when you understand the technology really well, you sort of you wish for that, something like this to happen, because it finally puts these people out of business permanently because their project will fail. You know, it's almost like you want it to happen. Well, are they dumb enough to actually go through with it? You know, time will tell. I'm just waiting for the day where the headline reads Coinbase was hacked, because you know, when you're such a big honeypot, you know, at some point someone's going to want to try something, whether it's for financial gain or just for giggles, just to prove a point, right? It's bound to happen. That is going to be a much more likely scenario than them trying to fork something, because you know, the only reason Bitcoin has value is because it's not controlled by anyone. You put, you know, a corrupt organization behind Bitcoin, you know, again, then you've done absolutely nothing. And I think there's enough people globally that understand this now that will not do it. So this is why I'm saying, you know, it's almost like too good to be true for them to go through with something as moronic as this. But again, you never know, you know, like, I'm never bearish enough on the human IQ. So anything is possible.
Yeah, the incentives seem misaligned for them to try making a big change like this, because people have opted into the ETFs, as an example, because Bitcoin is a certain thing. And making some material change to that and saying, no, like, this is the new coin, you're basically rug pulling a lot of people, and they would have the right to be pissed off. Now, if it's done through coercion from the federal government or something like that, then they might just piss off a bunch of people and say, too bad, you know, you don't get to decide that. But this is, I think, maybe the best case for Bitcoin as relatively ossified at this point. Like, we're not going to see any more massive changes the more institutional adopters come in, and certainly if nation states are adopting it as a strategic reserve asset. So that's my take. Gents, I got to get going. So for everyone who tuned in, thank you so much for listening. Of course, if you need help with proper Bitcoin self-custody, don't buy the ETFs. Don't buy MicroStrategy. Don't buy the proxies. I gotta be careful. I don't wanna get canceled, but we can help you. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can get real Bitcoin in real self-custody so you can be self-sovereign. We help with online privacy phones, Plan B residency options, especially if you are living somewhere like the UK. Mr. Messett, and you're looking to get out. So again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We'd love to chat with you. Guys, thanks for the time. We will catch up again soon.
Thank you, Michael. Always a pleasure, man.
Cheers.
Thanks, Michael.